Hello and welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drew.
How's it going, Drew?
Excellent. How's it going with you?
Good, good. I've been super, super busy just with, I think it was last week you were talking about having like some crazy launch on like a Friday, like some build that had to be built. I have three projects that need to be done this week.
Three projects need to be done this week. Are they shipping?
Well, if they were done, they would go, but it's been a little bit of a delay, so I've just been trying to work overtime to get these things done. I'm going to work after we're done here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so is probably everybody.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because it's Monday, yeah. May 2nd, 2016. Yeah.
All right, so so do you want to tell us a little bit about these projects at all, or can you? Is there anything interesting that you're doing with them?
Yeah, I can say one of them is just, the client is just a gym. They have a gym.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dealing with this system. I don't want to call it the name because they're doing a horrible job, but they have this system for managing their users. Mm-hmm. And they can actually do something cool where they have these bikes in the gym. So they do like cycling.
Yep.
These bikes in the gym, and you can track your progress and you book your bike beforehand. And you can actually get on that bike, do your workout, and then go online later and check how well you did, which is kind of cool. But the system around that is kind of like, it's not doing very well because you buy these credits and then you buy your spot on the bike and you pay with it via these credits. So you never really have a membership. So a lot of these newfangled gyms out there, they're not selling memberships on a monthly basis because they find that people just end up leaving or not joining at all. There's no middle ground. Mm-hmm. You're either paying every month or you're not paying at all. So they have these like credits where you just pay per use, just like, you know, most stuff in life.
That's pretty interesting. So you're prepaying, kind of like you would with maybe a Starbucks card or something.
Exactly.
And then as you use it, it deducts
from
it.
So the system around that is wonky. So we're building them a new site because the whole thing is in iframes.
Yep.
And there's something up with their sessions and cookies and
stuff. How old is it?
Their site is new. That's the problem. They hired someone and they necessarily didn't have a strong website. So we're rebuilding the website without iframes to take advantage of the system directly versus having it in iframes. The problem is their system that they're using, I think, is still an MVP.
Okay.
So there's like problems with like caching and sessions. And
is
so
that,
using it through the
are the iframes due to some third party stuff?
That that's the third party thing is that we're accessing it through an iframe. So the problem is, accessing it through the iframe, you lose things like, well, it can't actually know whether you're signed in or not on the actual outward site. The iframe knows, but outside of that,
they're different sites.
Yeah, they can't reach outside, which is a security thing, right? So you can never tell if they're logged in. They're having problems with different browsers and their caching and their cookies. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, let's just eliminate all that and go direct to the source. But we'll rebuild the site so that it builds up some of the things that are missing that were in the iframe.
Okay.
So that one's kind of challenging because the design is really fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one that's I talked about the bus company before with you and how they have like every morning they get hammered with traffic because people are checking to see if their student's bus is on time or not.
Right. School buses.
Yeah.
Right?
School buses. Mm-hmm. So, and we're building them a system to do remote ticketing for these like support tickets. Mm-hmm. So parents and teachers and bus drivers can go on the website and submit a ticket and it goes into their system. It emails all the people that are appropriately attached to that school.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one's really complicated. It's got a lot of many to many relationships with schools, students, teachers, parents, staff, contacts themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of like getting that thing going as far as a phase one. It's been kind of hectic.
Yeah, that does sound pretty interesting.
Yeah.
We actually started discussing maybe some uses with Cassandra. Just because of some of the different, I guess, kind of many-to-many relationships that we're looking at and the ways that it doesn't map as cleanly to the relational database as it might to a graph database.
So you'd actually be using, like, the graph features?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We just kind of started looking into that to see if it makes sense or not, so.
Can you plug it in with an adapter, or is there a lot more work to be done? Because I know that like maybe you can jump from SQL to Postgres to SQLite pretty quickly, but can you jump to Cassandra without like rewriting everything?
Very good question. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I have to look into that.
And the last thing is just a bus company or another a company that does pooling for hydro and gas. So in Ontario and some other provinces across Canada, you can actually join a pool of people and save money on your hydro bill. And if you're a small business, you can save tons of money because you can get a better day rate for your electricity.
Oh,
so we're helping them do a pooling system. So every month there's a new pool.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the month, the pool closes out and all these people get either join the account or don't, depending on the status of their account. So,
well, that sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah,
all right. So what about the
meetups around town? So meetups around town. I went to HackerNest as well as the Tech Vancouver.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I swear I was planning to go to just about every meetup, and I ended up going to Get Help in Zero Tech on Monday. And then obviously the Hacker Nest Vancouver on Monday. Cool. So that was the only two meetups I went to the whole week. I got pretty busy with some work stuff and some personal stuff. But yeah, it was pretty awesome. So the GitHub in Zero Tech, I thought that was pretty fun. Mm-hmm. And Hacker Nest, I thought, was pretty amazing.
Yeah, checking out Skio Music from last episode.
Yes.
Or episode before that.
That's right. From the episode before that, we had CTO Neil and Omri. Business dev. Yep, manager. And that was a lot of fun. Actually, what did you think about the venue?
It was awesome. Like, wasn't it? It's right near Bean Around the World, corner of Canby and West Hastings, right?
Canby and West Hastings, yeah.
So so on Canby, there's the actual little... People have probably seen it.
Right between Meat and Bread and Bean Around the World.
It used to be some sort of movie studio or something.
Was it?
Was there, yeah. It was some video
production place.
I have
no idea what used to be there. I didn't even know there was anything there until I saw
it. It's very nondescript, but it's there. And it's the... You've probably seen it. It's got the down... There's like a downstairs sort of basement office, I guess.
It's kind of like the Batcave, I felt like, but like in a really cool way.
You can never really see inside from the outside, but it's awesome inside.
It was really awesome inside. It was nice and big. We had a great turnout. Definitely great event hosts. And I think we're going to be back there with Hacker Nest in June.
Awesome. Yeah. I was talking to Neil and they have like old, it used to be a bank or something. It was just store stuff there. So
I think it was like gold mining vaults or something.
Yeah. They had some like smelting, gold smelting, like facade of the actual smelting. Like
that's one of the things I really like about all of these meetups being in all these different places. We get to actually go and see, you know, what these buildings look like. And this is a very historical building in Vancouver.
Yeah.
All right. So let's take a look at what's coming up. We have Monday, May the 2nd. We have a few different meetups. What's happening, James?
We have GitHub and Zero Tech.
That's over at Decentral, 436 West Pender, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. So what kind of person should attend that, and what should you bring?
Well, we have resident expert Adam Dimitrik talking about Git, and the new thing that he sort of added is this Zero Tech thing, which is solving problems maybe without even using tech, right?
Sure. I think maybe addressing a problem and... not adding tech for the sake of adding tech. Mm-hmm. So kind of saying, you know, let's take a look at this problem, let's flesh it out, and at the last moment possible, we'll make a decision as to what that has to be. So if you're going to be adding something, have a compelling reason to be doing so. I think it's a really interesting really interesting idea as well. So I think we've talked at different times about different languages and about different frameworks, and you know, say pulling in jQuery just to add,
like a drop down or something,
or a drop down or something
rudimentary.
Yeah, and so not doing that, but to really question those kind of decisions, and even things like build out your MVP, get something working before even introducing a database.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, if you're, you know, serializing your data or just writing to a file or, you know, saving it in an in-memory store or whatever.
Actually, I took some Adam advice the other day. I didn't even realize it until now. Someone was, you know, these paid services for like doing remote backups of your database?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a big fan of Mailgun. Mm-hmm. And I just set up a cron job with a script and it sends me my backup every Monday for free with Mailgun. Because Mailgun allows you to have free emails up to 10,000 a month.
There you go.
So I was like, oh, I saved myself, you know, $20 a month. Like just for some bash scripts.
Yeah. Sweet. Okay. So that's from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Decentral is kind of an interesting place as well. Definitely bring your laptop, bring something to work on if you've got it, and be ready to just kind of, you know, have some conversations with people. If you get some messed up Git merges going wrong or something, bring those. That'd be really fun to talk about.
Yeah.
All right. Then we got the Polyglot Reading Group, and that's from 6 p.m. over at 369 Terminal Avenue.
Mm-hmm. And the title is How Complex Systems Fail.
How Complex Systems Fail. So that sounds like it should be pretty fun. So the paper, it is a reading group. So there is a paper. Make sure to have read that before you go. It starts at 6:10 and it does say don't be late.
Yeah.
So it's discussions based on the paper. So make sure to have read that before you go. I guess there's probably no necessity to bring your laptop as it will be discussing things about the paper, but you probably want to have notes from it, and that might be in the form of, you know, something in your laptop.
Yeah, so they have some networking and drinks after, so that'd be pretty cool to check out as well.
Definitely. Then there's the Ember. This one over at CodeCore 142 West Hastings at 6:30. Mm-hmm. Now, this one is a talks night, so it's usually quite well attended. And it should be pretty fun.
Yeah, it's definitely, it starts at 6:30 and the talks are actually at 6:45. So
and the talks sure is, you know, beginner friendly. It says it's how and why to write your first Ember add-on. That might be really interesting.
Yeah.
There's another one, Ember CLI deployment pipeline with Travis CI.
Cool.
That says intermediate, but I think this is something really, might be really interesting. To be honest, I'm not very interested in what I know about Ember. I'm not that interested in Ember. But having said that, these talks do look pretty interesting, like how to write your first Ember add-on and then CLI deployment pipeline with Travis CI. Simply based on the merit of those two being interesting topics,
sure.
I might want to go to this and I think I'd get something out of it.
A rare notice here, a laptop, if you like. Bring one if you like.
Yeah.
So yeah. All right, too.
Sweet. And then there's the VanLug board meeting, so the Linux user group board meeting, and that seems to happen every now and then. It's at 7 p.m. over at SFU downtown, 515 West Hastings.
Yeah, it also says that there's a note here that it's an automatedly scheduled meeting, which means that there's a possibility that it might be on a holiday or something, so just make sure you check and maybe make sure it's actually going to happen.
I really dislike it when that happens, you know, these auto-scheduled meetings. So it does make me wonder, like, is this being curated? Is this actually
sure.
something that's happening?
Yeah.
But maybe we'll go and check it out.
Yeah, cool.
Because Linux is pretty awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. And that seems to be our Monday. So then Tuesday, May 3rd, we start out. There's CodeCore has a lunch and learn at 12 p.m. And I wonder if this is going to be a whole week of lunch and learns.
Is this when they collect new students for the next round of...
No, so they usually do a week of lunch and learns,
right.
Which is... it actually has nothing to do with CodeCore. It just happens to be at CodeCore.
Well, oh, okay.
Sorry. It's arranged and hosted, and usually drinks and things are provided by CodeCore. But no, it's just open to the tech community. Talks for the community by the community. So, you know, we've had people like John Boxall from Mobify give an interesting talk, or, you know, just all sorts of different people. And
I see.
I'm not sure if that's what this is this time or not, but it looks like Monday there is definitely a lunch and learn from noon. So there's probably going to be some pizza and sodas. And this is called The Agile Way to Done.
To Done.
The Agile Way to Done.
Yeah. It actually says here that the little tagline here, struggling to deliver, got the agile blues, scrum dementalists driving you bonkers. So I guess if you're into agile and all that stuff, it'd definitely be a cool intro or a cool way to find some secrets and cheat.
Yeah, there is a Pick-A-Tick sign up.
Yeah.
So we'll link that below. Make sure to sign up and maybe see you there.
Cool. All right. Polyglot Vancouver.
Yeah, so the Polyglot Social over at St. Regis, 608 Dunsmuir Street. That should be pretty fun. And be ready to have some drinks and share some cool stories about, or just talk tech with people.
Yeah, this is a long one too. I know sometimes there's a lot of stuff going on at the same time. This one says that the social peters at around 10.
Mm-hmm.
So you can probably get there a little bit after 6 o'clock and still be safe.
Yeah. All right, so there's this other one, this UX Book Club. This looks pretty interesting. I haven't seen this one before, and the location is only shown to members. I haven't signed up, so I don't know where it is. But it's Tuesday, May 3rd from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., and it's The User Experience Team of One by Leah Bewley. And it looks like it might be pretty interesting, but this is a book discussion. Mm. So apparently if you use the this code that they have on their site, you can get 30% off the book. And this is to talk about it after you've maybe read it.
That's pretty awesome. You get a discount on the book for even just attending this meetup. That's awesome.
Even just for looking at the site and grabbing the code from it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish that happened more often when people are plugging necessarily books or maybe even like software, you know?
Yeah. It's always nice to get discounts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And there's the PyLadies Hack Night at Demonware, Suite 700, 369 Terminal from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Have you been out to any of the PyLadies Hack Nights?
No, but I heard good things from the one that you went to, right?
Yeah, I thought it was really awesome. Very well attended, very well presented, some great speakers. This one is work through some Code Wars problems together.
Yeah.
So this is something I love Code Wars. I discovered it a couple of years ago, and I've got quite a few kata up there that I put together that I should probably go and redo or maybe write some better tests for them. But Code Wars is awesome. If you're interested in Python, if you're interested in the PyLadies Hack Night, I would highly recommend you go out and check that out. Should be really great. And then there's the Lighthouse Labs at 350 128 West Hastings from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. What's going on there? Tuesday, May 3rd.
Yeah, they have this iOS info session. So if you're interested in their iOS bootcamp or thinking about joining that, it's definitely a good place to check that out, as well as network with people at Lighthouse.
Okay, interesting. So they've got a intro to iOS development part-time program and an iOS development bootcamp.
Yeah.
And so it says that it starts out at 6. There's networking and pizza. Then there's the part-time program presentation from 6:30. There's the bootcamp program presentation from 7. And then there's networking and QA from 7:30. So I'm not really super familiar with their iOS program, but I did work with somebody who graduated, I believe, their bootcamp program, and he was an iOS developer.
Cool.
So yeah, it might be interesting to check out if you're interested in that.
Cool. And then we have the PUG.
Public Cloud Users Group. So I love this. This is something I really, I think of all of these, I want to go to that and then maybe wander over to the Polyglot Social. We'll see. Pretty busy these days, so I might not make it to the second one, but I definitely want to make it out to PUG because that's obviously awesome. I say it every month that it happens. Yeah. This is a what in the cloud of the past month. If you've missed anything, and for sure you have, unless you're Matt Carolyn, who seems to be up on it all, then this is a great time to just get caught up in that. And also, so this time, it's got an interesting theme, I think, as well. Spark in the cloud.
Yeah.
So Spark is something I think we've talked about as well. And
Apache Spark.
Yeah. So this should be really interesting to go and just check out.
Yeah, definitely. I think Matt... I went to the one with the, it was the Amazon like desktop mirroring thing with the Chromebook.
And they actually smashed the Chromebook.
Yeah, cool. And he booted up a brand new one and it logged right in the exact same spot he was at.
Nice.
But before that, Matt actually did a little, kind of couple slides about like the roundup of the month of like, of changes in the public cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really interesting hearing about all these different technologies that changed over the last like month or month and a half.
I would say it's invaluable. I mean, just going to that saves you maybe a good week of research.
Yeah.
Like really, I don't even think I'm exaggerating.
Yeah.
And then there's the Clojure Hack Night. So if you want to make it to both of those, you maybe can, because that's also at CodeCore 142 West Hastings from 6 p.m. Make sure to bring your laptop to the Clojure Hack Night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we mentioned it. Bring a laptop to PyLadies if you're going to that. I don't think you're going to need a laptop for Lighthouse Labs. So far, I've never had a need for a laptop at the Public Cloud User Group, although I think Matt's mentioned that if you do get there a little bit early, there might be some help with some stuff might be a reason to do that.
Yeah, pick some brains.
So that might be kind of interesting if you want to talk a little bit about, you know, how to get set up on one of the cloud infrastructures like Azure or Amazon or whatever else.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And so that's kind of our Thursday, but I did decide I wanted to bring in this oddball one.
Sure.
So we kind of said let's make mention of these different different meetups that look kind of cool. I think this is kind of cool. It has really probably nothing to do with the tech scene, although it might make a lot of sense if you wanted to make a Kickstarter video or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's this meetup that I've kind of seen a few times, never gone out to, but I thought it was really interesting. The Vancouver B-Movie Meetup. And this is happening Tuesday, May 3rd. The location is to be disclosed, and it's from 7 p.m. But this one is kind of interesting because they have a crew call for a TV series. So it seems like they're going to start making a new B-Movie TV series. Mm. And I think the idea is just for fun and to kind of get more used to making movies. And so it should be pretty fun, and I think this would be a good day to get into it.
It does say it's in a real TV studio, so that's pretty pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised there isn't more crossover between tech and movies, you know, considering where we live. So,
you know, I think there might be. We just might not know it, and maybe we just started some.
Hey, if someone's out there and knows about a meetup that has that crossover, we'd love to talk about it.
Yeah, okay, and that's Tuesday, and we've got Wednesday, May the 4th.
Yes, a very busy Wednesday.
Yeah, so we've got from 7 a.m., the AngularJS Vancouver. Is that right, James?
Yeah, that's what it says on their meetup. It says 7 a.m.
Wow. Okay. So, and it needs a location. It looks like it's a conference. So NG Conf Extended Vancouver. It sounds to me like this might be a...
Yeah, it's got a ton of speakers. Obviously, it's Angular. It's got a ton of speakers from the Angular, you know, ecosystem talking about Angular, all the cool things Angular. It makes sense. It's weird that this day, because there is another Angular meetup that we're going to talk about.
So this is people getting together to watch the live stream here in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And it's probably an all-day thing, and it starts at 7 a.m. our time. So if you're interested in doing that, make sure to sign up. Otherwise,
check it out.
So the Linux Desktop Meetup, this is at 4:30 to 6:30, Wednesday, May the 4th, over at Decentral, 436 West Pender. If you're interested in Linux, or if you're running Linux and you want to go talk about Linux Desktop, Ubuntu 16.04 came out pretty recently.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you've upgraded, maybe you haven't.
That's an LTS.
Maybe you've got an older laptop and you're wondering if you can make use of it. Maybe you've never tried Linux before, but you want to. This would be the group for you.
Yeah. Adam's also plugging his Slack here, vantech.herokuapp.com, to get an invite to that. So you can ask questions in the Linux channel there.
All right. And then we've got from 5:30 p.m. at Build Direct Technologies, 19th floor of 401 West Georgia. We have YVR testing. What's up with that, James?
So this is presented by Build Direct, and the talk is there's two talks on automation. The first one is UI automation across desktops and browsers, and effective and scalable test automation.
Wow. So this sounds like some really cool stuff, I would say. If you don't have automated testing with your product, I want to ask you, why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
And this might be a good time to start getting into it, or to get more involved with the community if you're not doing that. I feel like, with some companies, there's a huge wall between QA and dev, and it's just like separate departments. And I really feel like that shouldn't be the case.
Right.
We should all be responsible for testing. We should all be responsible for developing. Maybe we're focused a little bit more on the test automation, or on the manual testing, or on the development.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of overlap there. I think there should be, and I think we should all be working together to make our products better.
I think the cool thing here, or one of the cool things that I've seen come up lately, is the whole like testing your UI is really cool. And because these new technologies have come out, like Selenium WebDriver and these cool things, you can actually test your real browser. It'll open up your browser and click around for you, and you can see what happens and see if things fail. It's really cool.
Yeah. So this is actually really two very interesting test automation talks, and I think that would be highly valuable to go to. I know that YVR testing in general has had some really excellent, well-organized and well-presented meetups that I've been to so far. I'd love to make it out to this. I'm not sure if it's going to line up for Wednesday, but it's one of the high contenders for me.
Yeah, cool. And now we have a user-submitted event, the Data and Drinks with Tableau Software. So Gerard on the YVR Dev Slack sent this to me and said, hey, can you check out our event? And I said, absolutely.
Yeah, so Jared from Tableau Software, he was out at HackerNest on Monday. I can't remember if he made a shout out. I think he did. He gave a community shout out about this as well. So this is Data and Drinks with Tableau Software. Is it at Unbounce, 401 West Georgia Street?
Yeah, it is.
5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m.?
Yep.
Okay, awesome. So that should be a lot of fun as well. That's, interestingly, in the same building as the YVR testing. So I think what I might try and do is go out to the YVR testing one and then hop on down to Unbounce for some socialization and drinks. But I don't know.
We'll see how it goes. Talks actually start at 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
oh, so there are talks?
It's called Cloud Testing. How do we test Tableau online?
Oh, wow. Okay, so this sounds like a lot of testing happening.
Oh, yeah.
And that sounds like it would be pretty fun, too.
Yeah, it's also free. It is on an Eventbrite link, and it is a free event as well.
Make sure to register.
Yeah.
Scholar Reading Group over at Hootsuite. That's 5 East 8th Avenue from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Check it out. And then we have another one from 5:30 to 6:30, the Pearl Site Meetup.
Yep.
Okay, and that's on Angular 2, A First Look. This would be pretty cool, I think, if you've got an Angular app and you're thinking of upgrading, or even if you're just interested in Angular 2, this would be really interesting to go and check out.
Yeah, it's a big, for people that don't know, I mean, if you're in the Angular world, you probably know that Angular 2 is a big difference from Angular 1 in terms of syntax and how things are organized. So it'd be awesome to have some experts here and some people here that have used it and know about it to help you, you know, move on from 1 to 2.
Yeah, absolutely. And then from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., or sorry, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., 2 hours there, there's the Vancouver Rust Meetup, and this is at the Vancouver Public Library. Definitely make sure to bring a laptop. If you don't already, you should have Rust installed, and it looks like we'll be going through Chapter 3 from the Rust book, Tutorial Guessing Game. Now, don't get too scared from that. Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 are very short kind of introduction. Cool. Just get Rust installed. So the tutorial is really where it starts from. So make sure to come out to that. And so
would you come to that with Rust installed, or will this help you get Rust installed?
Come to that with Rust installed.
Okay, cool.
So that's maybe the third time I'm saying it now. Come to that with Rust installed.
Okay. The next one is the Vancouver Accessibility and Inclusive Design Meetup. And this is their May meetup. They have them every other month.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, the description is kind of vague, but the actual, if you read the about the group, their whole idea is to make sure that accessibility and all these different things are included in all of your best practices. So if you're building a site or building a tool, you have to think about accessibility, especially in today's, you know, environment with people that have disabilities. And even there's actually some government rules about certain sites and their ability to support people with disabilities. So it's important to know about this information.
That's really interesting, actually. Something came up at work the other day, and we were talking about this, although it wasn't for Vancouver. And there was something interesting. Someone said, oh, we don't really have to worry about this, about, you know, if somebody's colorblind or whatever, because there are going – that's only applicable, I think, in Washington State if there's nobody to assist.
Oh.
So if there is somebody – like, let's say you have a device. Like, you know, when you go into McDonald's?
Yeah.
And now they have that automated ordering system. Mm-hmm. But there are also McDonald's staff on hand that could assist you with that. So they might not have to worry too much about whether they are following good practices or not, basically.
Oh, because there's someone on staff that will help this person.
Yeah, but yeah. I think the but not having that, there are now actual legal requirements out there.
Yeah, I mean, once you go to online, it's sort of like the Wild West as far as accessibility goes. Some people pay really close attention, some people don't. It's kind of difficult. I have a friend that's deaf and mute, mm-hmm. and he can't call his bank.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't really support the accessibility that well. So he has to like get a friend to call sometimes, because it's just the doing it the other way around and calling the line and stuff. It's crazy. So, you know, it's always nice to support these.
So
support
how would they better design their phone system for deaf and mute people?
They'd have to support though. It's called like, there's this thing called Teletype, but these machines are super expensive. So you have to go somewhere that has one of these machines or something. It's really weird, but the best thing would be move it online. You can use the computer, but instead they still have these things he has to call.
Oh, so they don't actually have the online part for
not
it as
for
well.
Not for every service. Not they do for some. Service. And I mean, sure, some banks are different, but So it's important. And they also have a suggested donation, $0 to $5, if you want to check that out. This is at 12 Water Street, Open Road Communications.
Okay, very interesting. Then there's the Android Developers Meetup at Mobify, third floor, 948 Homer. Yeah. Make sure to bring a laptop to that, an Android if you have one.
Yeah, absolutely. This one says only RSVP if you are sure that you are coming.
So that was interesting. I went to, I think, the last Android developers meetup, and there was, I think it was capped at 30 or 40 or 80 people. I don't remember how many it was capped at now. But I do remember that I was on the wait list, and I said, you know what? I really want to go to this. I'm just going to go. And if they say, sorry, we're full, then that's okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if they don't, because I thought, you know, people are going to RSVP and then not show up. And I'm telling you, more than half of the people that RSVP didn't show up.
Mm.
But having said that, now they say only RSVP if you're sure that you're coming. So that might change the numbers a little bit. And on the other hand, this was a really great meetup, I thought. So make sure to go out to that if you're interested in it.
Yeah. All right. Open late at OpenDNS.
Mm-hmm.
Let's Encrypt with Ivan Boyle, I guess. Sorry, okay. Ivan, if I'm killing your name there.
Sweet. So Let's Encrypt, what do you think that's going to be all about?
Oh, it's going to be about the infamous Let's Encrypt, the free SSL certification.
Oh, awesome. So I haven't been following this too much, but I remember, I guess, a year and a half, 2 years ago, I started looking at SSL certs, and I saw coming soon free SSL certs, and I think it was by Google, and I think that might be this one.
It's out now. Like, you can use it. I used it on three or four sites now.
Awesome. Yeah. So this should be pretty fun. And I'm guessing this is going to be learning about how it works and how to get into it. It's about a 30 to 45 minute talk, and that should be a lot of fun. That's over at OpenDNS, Suite 600, 675 West Hastings.
Yeah. Cool.
Awesome. And that's our Wednesday. So then Thursday, So we have an interesting lineup for Thursday. We have the obviously DDD, CQRS, and ES practitioners over at Decentral from 436 West Pender. As we said last time, this is a really amazing, more of a workshop sort of meetup. You could bring a laptop, although a lot of this is very hands-on, more planning, whiteboarding sort of event storming session type things.
Sure.
And I'm not sure what this week's is going to be like, but it, really well attended, really well presented, very good level of sort of senior developers, architects, practitioners, and definitely something that's worth taking time, a little bit of time out of work to go and to learn or to be involved in the community that's doing cool things here. I think event storming or event sourcing is great. DDD is obviously a really pretty hot topic, and I think it's something we can all benefit from actually implementing. And CQRS, I'm still actually learning quite a bit about all of these things, and it's just something that's really, I think it makes a lot of sense the more you dive into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we have, of course, the Learn Data Science meetup at 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., and that's over at Cardinal Path, 1140 Pender Street West, Suite 840. That should be a lot of fun as well. And I think we have our guest today is actually one of the organizers of Learn Data Science. And this is Learn Data Science by doing Kaggle competitions. So if you have a bit of experience with data science and you want to actually put it into practice, this would be a good way to get started with that. Make sure to bring your laptop.
Yeah, the topic is facial key points detection.
Cool. That does sound pretty cool. Yeah. Wow, that sounds really very related to some of the things that we do. We have a kiosk system that does have a camera.
Really?
So
wow.
Yeah,
that's cool.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's deep learning with visual processing techniques.
Nice. And then we have a couple of kind of oddball ones that maybe they fit, maybe they don't fit, but we kind of wanted to give a mention to.
Yeah,
what do we
for
have,
sure.
James?
So the first one is the BuildDirect Talks meetup.
Mm-hmm. So this looks kind of cool. So it's marketing ABC, always be converting. Mm-hmm. Now, this is more geared toward digital marketers, but marketing and digital marketing is something where there's a lot of overlaps between, it's kind of between developers and sales in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot more development creeping into marketing. So it might be of interest.
Yeah, there's actually a presentation by Tyler Vautier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Engagement and Conversion Manager.
Yeah, and so that's from 6 p.m. Over at BuildDirect, 401 West Georgia, on the 19th floor.
Cool. All right, and our other one.
So we got the Red Academy Growth Hacking.
Yeah, it's called 40 Ways to Boost Your Startup's Growth in Real Time.
Yeah, so this might be kind of interesting as well. It's not really maybe developer, but it's more the business strategy for your startup if you happen to have one. And that looks like it might be kind of fun. And it would be a good excuse to hop on over the bridge to Broadway and Granville. This is the second floor, so 200 1490 West Broadway at Red Academy.
Yeah.
And then we have one more, and that's the Vancouver Financial Innovation Community over at, where's that on Homer? At 310 Homer Street on the fifth floor. So is that the Microsoft building?
Yeah, it's 318 Homer Street.
318 Homer Street on the fifth floor.
So I guess there was this thing called FinTech 2016. It happened a few weeks ago. And this is sort of a follow-up event for people that maybe went to that.
Mm-hmm.
You can just go there and talk to other people in the FinTech community.
Interesting. So tell us a little bit about FinTech. What is FinTech?
So FinTech, financial technology. So our guest that's coming in today, Charles, he works at a FinTech company. And the FinTech sort of system is there's a bit of disruption meets modernization. So in that sense, it's maybe disrupting traditional ways that you might use a traditional bank, like a bank you walk into, or even just online services.
Yeah, well, it seems like, you know, a lot of people would probably shy away from, say, hey, let's make a bank.
Yeah.
You know, from actually trying to make or compete with the existing banks, because those are, you know, some pretty big companies, pretty big corporations that would be, I guess, hard to kind of challenge. Whereas with FinTech, it's kind of let's actually use some tech and make some waves in the finance sector. So are these banks or are they banking alternatives, things like that? And it's kind of interesting to see some of the approaches here. I know that in Vancouver, we have Mogo, we have Koho, we have Grow. I don't know if there are others, there may be, but this is something that's really interesting. And obviously when it comes to money and when money is your product, then, or like banking systems and services, then it seems like there's a lot of interest from, you know, people in tech, people in finance, people in business.
Yeah.
And there's, it might be kind of interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I saw this article the other day that said that the Canadian banks made more than the U.S. banks, which means that we're getting charged like crazy because our banks made more than them, despite the 10x population that's in the States.
Well, remember that 11-year-old girl that gave that talk that basically said that our banking system was robbing us and in cahoots with our government?
I hadn't heard about that. Tell me more.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll put a link to it. But yeah, it seemed pretty interesting. And anyway, I guess that's our week in meetups. And we're here with Charles Ilya Krempo, CTO of Coho. Thanks for being with us, Charles.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for
having me. So much to talk about.
Yeah, so you're definitely pretty involved in the meetup space, in the meetup community. Obviously, as CTO of Coho, you're technical. You've had a pretty varied and interesting history so far, I think, in tech in Vancouver. Why don't you start off telling us a little bit about who you are and what got you into tech?
So yeah, I guess with tech, you know, I went to university, I started from mathematics, I switched to computer science. I went through different periods where I kind of like, you know, had companies of my own, worked for other people. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I got to a point where I started going to meetups. I thought this was really, really cool. And I thought, okay, well,
Was that in during university you were going to meetups?
Oh, no. Meetup didn't exist back then. So I'm old. I'm ancient. So no meetups.
Which university did you go to?
Simon Fraser.
And you started off in mathematics?
Correct.
Cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what made you decide to shift gears toward computer science?
So I really, really liked mathematics. But there was a point where I went to a career fair. Like I was doing like fourth year class at this time. Mm-hmm. I went to a career fair. And I asked the person there, what kind of jobs can I get as a mathematician in, like, you know, Vancouver? And they said, well, unless you're willing to move, the only job you can get is doing actuarial math, predicting when people die for insurance companies. I was like, what? I don't want to do that.
actuarial work?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Actuarial science.
So I was already doing computer science for fun. Like, there was a certain point where I kind of taught myself the program. I was like, oh, that's really cool. So I'll take some computer science courses. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of, like, just switched over. So I did math. And then I did computer science. I was there for more than 4 years.
Very interesting. So that, I think a common misconception with a lot of mathematics is that it's boring. Actuarial science, I think, is quite creative and probably like a really interesting field, but quite difficult to get into. But you thought, you know, when you heard that, that's maybe the only thing you can do.
Well, I think it was like just predicting when people die kind of freaked me out. Yeah. So I was like, I don't know if I want to do this for the rest of my life. So.
That's really interesting. I mean, I'm sure there would be other things as well.
No.
I guess like predicting insurance companies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, also just when it would make sense to get reinsurance on top of an insurance claim for a company, for example.
Yeah, quite true. I guess I'll never know, but
Don't worry, you can still change careers.
I could go back. it's kind of old. Like I've thought about, like, for example, oh, maybe I'll go to university and get a PhD or something. And I think, 6 years back in school is like, I don't
just
know.
Just for a piece of paper that maybe doesn't help you.
Yeah, it's like at my age, like I'm doing pretty well now. It's like, I don't know if I want to go back to school.
Sure.
That's pretty interesting because I usually think, you know, if you were to win a lottery, for example, like here's $10 billion or $100 million or even, you know, a small lottery and like $5 million, what would you do? And it's always for me, the first thing I would do is I'd go get a PhD from Harvard.
Yeah, for sure.
Well,
I can appreciate why someone would want to do that. Mm-hmm. I think if I actually did, like one of the interests I have is something called strong AI. Mm-hmm. So the original goal of AI was to make intelligence like us. And then, you know, nowadays, a lot of the stuff you call AI, you know, it's intelligence, it's useful, but it's nothing like us. Mm-hmm. So some people say, okay, well, let's give that original goal a name. And it's sometimes called strong AI, sometimes called artificial general intelligence, sometimes called cognitive AI. So I would spend time researching that. And it's going to involve, like, you know, learning more neuroscience. There was a point where I started to study neuroscience. I was able to get to the point where I realized they really don't understand how most of the brain works. Mm-hmm. So it makes it somewhat challenging to create, like, intelligence like us if you don't really understand how the brain works. But,
right.
I mean, that's what I would do.
Yeah, I think it's quite a few years ago, actually, someone gave me a book, Bill Bryson, Short History on Nearly Everything, I think it was called. And I remember reading through it, and there was one particular – actually, the whole book was great, I think. But there was one particular part that really resonated with me, and it was something like if you were to equate the whole Earth to an apple, and then kind of compare how much we know about the Earth, you know, we haven't even like as far as how far we've dug or dug into the earth, we haven't even pierced the skin.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And I thought, wow, that's so amazing. And I think that's kind of the same with almost everything else. Like, there's so little that we actually know, which makes everything exciting. There's still so much more to explore, so much to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think you kind of touched upon that, what you just said.
Yeah.
So you mentioned strong AI. Isn't there something called, like, weak AI or narrow AI?
Correct.
Can you talk a little bit about, like, what is that?
So really know? To contrast with strong AI, weak AI or narrow AI is what you call, like, you know, just like the intelligence not like us, right? Like, so for example, a neural network, and like the simple feed forward ones, or like a support vector machine or random forest or something like that, right? Mm. Like, that's intelligence. It's useful, but it's not like us.
Right.
It's a narrow AI or engineering AI or whatever you want to call it.
Right. So what about these, like, the hot new thing now is like chatbots.
Yeah.
So some of them have, like, I don't know if it's AI or, so is there a difference between AI and machine learning in terms of?
Yeah, it depends who you talk to. Yeah. I tend to conflate machine learning with the non-strong AI, so the weak AI.
Yeah.
I guess it's a way of kind of just giving it another label besides AI. There is kind of like a semantics war that some people want AI just to mean the original goal. And it's like, well, what do you call all the other stuff? Well, machine learning, right?
I see. Okay. So some people are saying that AI is the goal to get to a human brain digitally, and then machine learning would be everything else that's not that goal.
Yeah, like random forest or something.
Okay, cool.
So that's pretty interesting. You're also involved in quite a lot of meetups, not just attending them, but you also run some. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the meetups you're involved with?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, like, there's the machine learning group, mm-hmm. you know, something we're talking about now. There's something related to that, the data science group. Mm-hmm. And then along with that, there's also a learn data science group, a data science learning group. That has some things involved with that. So there's a data science reading group where you read a Scholarly paper and then you meet and discuss it, ask questions, stuff like that.
So what kind of person would benefit most from attending this, or typically what sort of people show up and what should they bring with them?
Yeah, so if you talk about the learning group in particular, there's different parts of it. The reading group, I would say it's someone who's like been doing this for a while. It's a little more advanced. We do have other things to kind of help people out. Like, for example,
data science?
Yeah. So data science, machine learning. Like, I think the way you can think of it is that data science is a place where you'd use, you know, machine learning. Like, you're not necessarily like programming it yourself. You're kind of using the tool that someone else made. Where, you know, with some of the machine learning stuff, some of the software engineers that get into this, like, they want to understand the stuff well enough where I can program this, right? Mm-hmm.
So maybe a physicist might not have built the Hadron Collider.
Yeah.
But they would kind of look at it from the theoretical point of view, what it should look like, how it's going to function. But you'd have maybe engineers actually.
Yeah. You'd have, like, I'd say most data scientists can't program at all. Mm-hmm. A lot of them work in, like, Excel. Mm-hmm. Some of them will know the language R. Some, like, really advanced ones are Python or, like, SQL. Like, these, my experience, I mean, might be unrepresentative, but mm-hmm. my experience is a lot of them can't program. Or when they can program, it's, like, one-off scripts.
Right.
But it's just, like, the type of people that come to this. So typically you get, like, this divide. You get software engineers that come, mm-hmm. and you get these kind of researchy backgrounds, someone with a physics background or psychology or biology that's kind of shifting into data science. You know, they're often very strong in stats and, mm-hmm. like, empirical methods and hypothesis testing, experimental design. And I guess the way to think of it, like, from like a software engineering point of view, is these are the users, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you're programming the tools, these are the users.
Oh,
but of
okay.
course, to use the tools, a lot of times you have to understand the theory, mm-hmm. which is part of what some of these data science meetups about. It's about understanding the theory. But again, you get software engineers that come there, and a lot of them, you know, they're not going to have the same stats background as someone who's like got a PhD in this, right?
Right.
But a lot of them, and myself included, like, I want to understand this deep enough that I can program this.
I see.
A lot of times you'll read this, like, oh, yeah, it kind of makes sense at a high level. Then you go to program, it's like, wait a second, how do I get from this step to this step? And you have to really dig and figure it out.
Right. So the crossover at the two meetups of the two different tiers of people, the scientists and the actual programmers, the crossover there is the theory part where they're both trying to, you know, get over that hump.
Well, this is still with regards to the reading group?
Yeah.
Okay.
You do get sometimes software engineers that want to go over data science and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I find, actually, you can think of it like this. Think of like with software engineering, right? You have like front end developers, you have back end developers, you have mobile developers, you have game developers. It's like these clusters of skills, right? You find that with like the data science type stuff. And data science is a very new term. Maybe they'll come up with new names just now, but you get this one cluster that's the researchy type. You get this one cluster that's kind of like the hybrid, like engineer data science type that they can actually implement this. I've also seen there's like the business intelligence type and it's one more, but I can't remember what it is.
I'm almost thinking like analytics versus marketing, you know, in that way, in a different sense, but kind of.
I think that's definitely a good analogy of people like analyzing something, but they might not necessarily know how to implement it or affect the data. They can read it and tell you what it says, but not necessarily figure out how to change it. That sounds like a good like sort of close area as far as the two different relationships go.
Interesting. So if I'm considering it, should I come out? What should I do? Beforehand.
So we do, for example, talks. That's the way you can see someone speak. There's different talks. Like there was one girl, Kiri, I'm not sure if I'm saying her last name properly, Nichols or something like that. She did a talk of how she got into data scientists. So she's a physicist. And she started like, you know, just teaching herself like some of the different theoretical stuff, the different tools. And then she tried Kaggle competitions. And we have a Kaggle competition group as part of the learning group.
If I think we actually saw her give a talk at Ladies Meetup.
So you didn't meet her.
Great. And we invited her to be on the show. That's so awesome. That'll be, I think, sometime next month.
Cool.
Yeah. But that was a talk where, you know, someone who, you know, you're just getting into it. Like, this is someone's story of how they got into this type of stuff.
I see.
Right.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Okay, so that's the learned data science.
Correct.
What about the machine learning and the Kaggle competitions?
So the Kaggle competitions are for someone who's learned a bit and now they want to like, you know, take it to the next level. Like, okay, I've read this stuff. What do I do with this, right? So one way to do that is just like starting projects, right? And think like if you're learning to program, I might say, okay, I'm going to create a back end. I'm going to create an API. I'm going to create this front end. I'm going to do some JavaScript stuff or like PHP stuff or Go stuff or Java stuff or whatever. This is a way of doing that kind of stuff. I'm going to do supervised learning. Here's a problem. Here's a data set. You're not doing the whole project because you know it's going to be overwhelming. We're going to do a thing. Someone gave me the data set. I'm going to create a predictive model or a classifier or something like that, right? And it lets you do that. It lets you put your skills to practice. And you get a type of knowledge that you don't get just from reading. Like there's some things you can learn just by reading things. But think like if I want to learn hockey or tennis or football, I can't just read about it. I got to go do it. This is the same type of thing.
Right. Yeah. And especially doing it with other people where you're kind of talking about it and interacting with each other.
I think that's one of the biggest hurdles of learning something new is not knowing how to apply it properly. A lot of time if you're in school, the teacher gives you an assignment and says, here's a thing you need to do. Go out and do that. If you're learning on your own, you don't have someone looking over your shoulder and saying, you need to do this project. You need to do this. Where that sounds like a great thing for the meetup group for machine learning is here's a project you need to do that helps you. Oh, now I have a goal that I can work towards.
I felt that programming actually really opened my eyes up a lot to some of the things I'd learned in mathematics. And it's like, oh, wow, there's suddenly now it's applicable. Now I see what you're talking about all those years.
I don't do that much math on the regular, but I did need to calculate a value on a logarithmic scale the other day. And I was like, oh, man, I got to like go and search this up, like go on Wolfram Alpha and like figure out the math. With like a log and it needs to be a certain range. And I was like, okay, that's like the closest I've gotten to math since I've really left.
Oh, really? I got really into Khan Academy when a few years ago. And I thought, wow, this is the greatest thing ever. And it was just really a lot of fun. So, okay. So that's, that sounds great. So if you're into kind of data science, you've studied a little bit of it. You kind of want to get your feet wet, or maybe if you're comfortable with it, you'd go out to the Kaggle competitions.
Yeah.
Nice. Or not competitions.
Well, they're not competing a lot of times. It's like the data set's already there. Let's just try this and see how we do. It's just a way of learning skills, but once you've learned it a bit, you can try your hand at a competition. There's people there to support you, maybe even form a team.
Wow. So that does sound pretty cool. And how often does that meet? Is that meetup?
Every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks. Awesome. Okay. And then there was another one, the machine learning meetup.
Correct. So the machine learning and the data science, like the main data science group, not the learned data science group, they're really sort of like the same thing. Like I'll go get talks. I'll find a speaker and I invite both of them. But the thing is which type of people these attract? So it seems people with a software engineering background, a computer science background, programming background, they seem to be more attractive to the machine learning group. The kind of researchy types like the physicists, biologists, statisticians and all that, they seem to be more attractive to the data science group. But they're really solving the same problem.
So is this kind of, this is kind of how I'm seeing it. So let's say I have a bunch of data. and I want to write some algorithms to go over and make sense of this data in some ways, then I might be looking at machine learning. Whereas if I want to analyze the data myself, and then maybe kind of come up with visualizations or maybe actually things to explain it, then I'd be looking more at the data science.
Well, I would say data science is machine learning plus more. I also like statistics and visualizations.
So machine learning would be a subset of data science or under the data science.
You can
kind of
think of it that way. I think that's the easiest way to think of it. Mm.
Cool. Okay. Well, that sounds pretty awesome. We'll definitely make sure to check that out. I remember we had a meetup last month, I believe it was, that was over at Unbounce. I was there. You invited a couple of the different meetups, and I think the Scholar Reading Group was there as well.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. I think there were about 200 people.
Something like that. That attracts quite a bit. Unbounce has a limited capacity. We used to do them at Hootsuite. I think the biggest we got was like 250, 260.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I think Unbounce has a really great space, and it's centrally located. So it's a pretty good one. If you're going to have more than 200, 250 people, then maybe rent a stadium.
Yeah.
Move down the street to the stadium.
All right, cool. So let's talk. Let's come back to. So you're involved now, CTO of Coho. This is a fintech company. Maybe we'll lead into that. But before we get there, you've had some pretty extensive experience. You've been involved with Hootsuite, with EA, Trulio, and a few others. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about some of your experience and what led into. A startup, I guess, which Coho is, and it's one of the faster growing fintech companies around.
Yeah. So I'm old. So like some people look at the resume and say, oh, you've done all this stuff. It's like, oh, I'm just old and it's depressing. You have no choice but do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, Charles looks like Santa right now.
Yeah, thanks. It's just depressing. Like Hootsuite.
He doesn't actually look that old.
No, yeah.
He
doesn't. Hootsuite.
We kind of all look the same age.
Yeah. I do appreciate that. I actually had, there was this a girl that was interning at a place, and she was 23, and she thought I was 25.
Yeah.
I was very flattered. I tweeted even. It's like, I'm very much not 25.
Nice.
Thank you. So I've had a bunch of companies of my own, and I had this one called 49 Research, and I had that a few years, and what happened is that my mother got sick, and my father had passed away a while, and I ended up moving to take care of her. Mm-hmm. And what I had was a 4-hour commute. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we had a couple clients. We had three projects, and we were working like 14-hour days or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was a project that was like, you know, really, really intense.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, I needed life to slow down. And myself and the founder ended up kind of suspending the company, and we ended up just kind of shutting it down. Mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up going to Hootsuite.
Yep.
With Hootsuite, the original engineer there, his name is Bear Kai.
Was this when it was in Railtown?
Yeah. So the original engineer at Hootsuite, mm-hmm. Him and I have been friends for years. We had worked at another startup called Naverick with an N. And they were having some financial problems, and people started getting laid off, and both him and I were among them. And, you know, he ended up going to what is Invoke now, then eventually created Hootsuite. And I ended up creating this company eventually. And when he shut that down, he told me to come over. Now, the thing is, he actually told me to come over quite a bit before. And, you know, in retrospect, when I was back then, I was like, oh, what the hell is this thing? I've got a company with employees. I'm not going to come.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But if I would have went then, you know, Hootsuite's worth a lot, and I have a lot more stock. Yeah.
Sure.
But anyways, I ended up there. I was... very near the beginning. I think I was employed 20-something.
Mm-hmm.
Invoke was the front room, and Hootsuite was the back room. And to my left sat someone in marketing. To my right sat nobody because not all the chairs are filled. It was very, very tiny. There was a handful of us that built most of it. So eventually, I was there for a while. We built it up. It's not a startup anymore. It wasn't a startup, I'd even say, when I left.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually I went up to Trulio, where Hootsuite was doing social media stuff, which is very interesting. Trulio was doing something different. I guess you can think of more of identity, something more along the lines of what you have for credit bureaus and type stuff like that. From a data science point of view, it's kind of interesting, being able to figure out identity with disparate information on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of interesting. Eventually after that, I ended up at Electronic Arts.
Mm-hmm.
It was a friend of mine persuaded me to go there. It's a big company.
Right.
It's essentially this is actually the second time I've been at EA.
Mm-hmm.
Myself and another guy, what they were interested in is they wanted someone to come in and create their platform. Mm-hmm. And the like you have delivery teams, DA, and you have these kind of like advanced development teams. And I think there was like three of them.
Right.
So we created one of the advanced development teams. We kind of like, you know, you have to figure out like what does EA need? Like what technology are other teams going to consume? And we just kind of created that.
We had Parveen Kaler on, and he was talking about game developers as like sort of damaged individuals as far as like their morale goes. Did you find that at working at EA? I know it didn't sound like you're working on the game side, but did you meet anyone there that was sort of like
I don't know if you said damaged individuals exactly, but I think we get a sense that there's a little bit of a difference in the culture between particularly games developers and non-games developers.
Yeah.
And, we were talking, I think actually after we'd finished the show, we were walking outside, and then he said something that really hit me, and it really made sense. This is maybe the biggest difference is, you know, you release something in the web world, you know, and it looks good or it works kind of, and maybe there's some bugs. But everyone's patting you on the back and you did a good job. Yeah. Whereas in games, you know, like one little thing, I don't like that color, you suck, or whatever. People complain a lot, and I think that can make it very stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah. They also have a thing where, how can I say this politely? So you have, they have deadlines, some of them real, some of them just because someone decided.
Right.
And, I'd say, they really promise a lot when it'd be better that they didn't. Like, we're going to do this in a month. I was like, are you insane?
Yeah.
So it kind of wears some people out.
Sure.
I think like I kind of escaped that. Like, I wasn't on a delivery team. Game teams are at delivery teams.
Yeah. Right.
We kind of like just did things properly and, you know, created the foundation for like other people to use.
Yeah. I feel we're a little bit like that with our startup right now.
Yeah.
Just like promising things and pushing really hard under insane deadlines, but it's kind of fun because we're actually stepping up and getting things out there and we're seeing the business grow. And I think probably that's something that we can expect to do for the next couple of months, maybe a year, but not forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like every startup has that, like, that this is the crazy goal that we're going to meet and we're going to get it.
But with games, it's almost like every time it's a startup, every new game is a new startup.
Yeah. Some ways, but with a bureaucracy that's gigantic.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. And so ultimately that led you to where you're at right now.
Coho.
So tell us a little bit about Coho. How did Coho get started? I've seen some of this in the news. I was working with a fintech company, Mogo. I've talked to another one, Grow. Yeah. So we've got, as far as I know anyway, three fintech companies here, all with different backgrounds, different stories, and growing a little bit differently, maybe scratching different itches in the market. Tell us about Coho.
Yeah, so I mean, Coho, what it's trying to deal with, it's trying to make banking better.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a story. Now, I can either tell the story, you know, and not say the name, or say the name and not tell the story. So I'm just going to tell the story without saying the name.
Okay.
So at the current financial institution I'm involved with, there's some stuff they do I think is questionable. Like, for example, you know, I was looking at my bank statements, and this is for, you know, I do for like when I'm doing my taxes, like, well, what are these $12 charges? Like, they're charging me $12 every month. And I had a bunch of accounts with my strategy for saving, and I went in there and asked them, well, what is this? And they go, oh, it's a dormancy fee. What's a dormancy fee? It's like, oh, we need you to look at your account and we charge you dormancy fee. It's like, okay, this is retarded. Give me my money. Mm-hmm. So I just closed down those accounts.
Right.
I don't like that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
just to clarify, you're not talking about Coho. You're talking about traditional bank.
I'm talking about a traditional financial institution I'm at now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think like banking should be like this, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, this very much attracted me to the idea behind Coho. It's basically to make banking better. It is not a bank. I'll just say that if the regulators are listening, it is not a bank.
Yeah.
it is offering an alternative to traditional banking, right? So you can do all the, you know, the typical stuff you do. Like, think you're a typical person. Okay. I work somewhere. My employers want a direct deposit. You could do that. You want to receive a check from the government for your GST. Take a picture. It's like a deposit check.
What about RRSP contributions?
I'm not sure. I have to check.
Okay. Because that would actually be something at one of the companies I worked with. We had an option if we decided to bank and have our RRSP with the same bank that the company was using, then they could actually take that deduction before tax.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't pay the tax up front on what we're earning.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty cool, but that was the only place that that was ever offered to me. If I were able to bank somewhere that was able to do that for me, regardless of where I worked or where my company did their banking. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be awesome.
So here's the thing. We actually do take feature requests, mm-hmm. right? So like
that's my feature request.
Yeah. So I mean, like, definitely.
Talking to the right person.
Yeah. So I mean, we've already had some. Like, so yeah. we've been like using ourselves. Like, I have a Coho card, like a Coho Visa that I spend on, mm-hmm. and we've pushed it out to just a handful of people to, like, you know, get their feedback. It's like, hey, what sucks? Tell us and we'll fix it. Mm-hmm. And we already had a couple of people say, oh, you know what? This is what I want. I want to be able to keep track of when I lend, you know, a friend money, or like I owe someone money, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, we had a couple of people ask, okay, we're going to build it, right?
Yeah.
So if people want it and they tell us, we'll go and build it. Traditional awesome. Bank's not going to do that.
That's awesome.
That is pretty cool. Okay. But anyway, how did you get involved? How do you know the people? What sort of tech stack are you working on as well?
Yeah. So, after I left EA, I actually thought about starting another company, and I had an idea for something. And, you know, when you go through the product development process, you first have you notice a problem that someone has. You come up with an idea, and then you want to get validation. You know, like, how do I know people actually pay money for this? And I went through this process. What I found out eventually is that when I told techno people, they really liked it. When I talked to non-techno people, so who I thought were most of the marketing people, sales, biz dev, they didn't understand it. And what they were using, this is better than, they weren't even using properly. So I dropped that. And at that point, I was like, hey, maybe I'll try something else, or maybe I'll go join someone. And a friend of mine, Cliff, who runs VanDev, he said, oh, there's this one company looking for a CTO. You should go talk to them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was at the time, like, you know, I was just talking to different people, and I went and talked to them. And I really, really liked the idea behind Coho. Like, it really appeals to me. Like, like I was saying, like, when I was dealing with my financial institution, there was a lot of stuff I didn't like about it. It's like, I don't like that experience. And I wanted something where, you know, like, if you think it was a mission statement for Coho, it's like, help people make better financial decisions. And don't nickel and dime them to death. Like, I shouldn't be, like, adversarial with them. Like, this should help me out.
So this was already a somewhat established startup?
Pre-funding. Daniel Eberhard, along with Mike Benna, Jonathan Bixby, and Joshua Bixby, they're the founders of the company. So they came up with the idea for it. Mm-hmm. And then they started, like, you know, doing research and trying to get funding. Before that, like, typically with a startup, one thing that helps you get funding is you have to attract a technical person. Mm-hmm. So once you've got a technical person on board, you're able to, like, get funding and close around and all that stuff. So I was, you know, talking to Daniel, really, really liked the idea. Once the funding came, you know, I came on board officially.
So this is really interesting because, there are a lot of people in the tech community, not a lot, I would say a handful of people show up at, different tech events and are like, hey, I've got this idea. I need a technical co-founder. Yeah. I have this idea. You know, I scribbled 4 lines of crayon on a piece of paper, and I need a co-founder.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they really haven't done a lot of their work or anything like that. So what sort of level of commitment of business development, I guess, does somebody need to have, in your opinion, to actually really attract a competent technical co-founder?
So, I mean, it's going to depend on the technical person, right? Like, people are different experiences. Sometimes it's good just to try it out, just see what bad looks like, right? Mm-hmm. Then eventually you learn, you know, what to watch out for. Some of it, like, I care very much about the people involved. I'd haven't in the past. Mm-hmm. I made mistakes the hard way where I find that out.
Right.
I spent time talking to Daniel and the founders, and, like, I really like them. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's like, you know, we can work well together. I like being in the same room with them. Mm-hmm. So it was great. Also, there's other things like, do you like the idea? Is it something to be passionate about? Like, mm-hmm. like, you know, in a startup, like, people, like, if you like the 9-to-5 thing, that's great. Mm-hmm. But a startup's not 9-to-5.
Right.
Right. Like, you invest in, you probably have to go down a bit in how much you're getting paid, but you got stock, right? Mm-hmm. And hopefully you think it's worth something, right? Like, nothing's guaranteed in life, but mm-hmm. I've made money off startups before. I made nothing off some of them.
negative.
I've lost money. Like, yeah. I've lost money on companies I created before.
Yeah.
But I also made a lot of money off companies I created. So it's a calculated risk. If you believe in it, like, you'll be working on the weekend when it needs me. Like, not all the time, but, like, you know, sometimes there's a real deadline. It's a conference we have to go to where there's investors there. We just have to go the extra mile.
I mean, if you're passionate about what you do, you're going to be doing that kind of stuff anyway. Maybe not necessarily directly related to your work.
Yeah.
You're going to be researching. You're going to be doing. So, I mean, if it is something, if you're also passionate about work, you could almost consider that a benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're doing something you actually really enjoy as well.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like work.
Right.
Right.
Well, that sounds pretty awesome. Okay, so as CTO, what sort of say did you have into the technology used?
Well, one of our investors, Stanley Park Ventures, initially...
Stanley Park Ventures?
Correct, SPV, Stanley Park Ventures. So initially, they had an engineer there named Amy, and I can't pronounce her last name. I won't try to say it, but anyway, she's going to kill me. She was doing a lot of the engineering work initially. When I came on board, but it was at that time, it was just front end, the website. When I came on board, I kind of just had a say. So I like Go. I've done a lot of different languages. I think if you count every language I've ever touched, it's like 40 or 50. If you count the ones, like I did a lot, like from day to day for a very long time, I'd say probably like 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
I used to be like a C++ programmer years ago. I've done C#. I've done PHP. I've done Go, even a bit of Scala and Erlang. But
Is so it Amy Satopo?
Yes, if I'm pronouncing right. Yeah, so her. Have you met her?
No, I just Googled.
Yeah. So anyways, like I like Go. I've been using it for about 3 years. There are things I like about it. I like the interface-based development. You don't have to say like, okay, this implements this. Like what happens if, okay, I need something that's like, say, it has to have like a bark and a run method, right? And, you know, there's this other class, a third party made, and it has those methods, but just, you know, it's not saying I implement this interface. Well, you have to create an adapter. Okay, well, that kind of sucks, right? I don't have to do that. Go has what's called, well, it's, the thing is called duck typing. Go almost has that. There's some edge cases that'll piss you off when it does that. But it has that.
Well, speaking of Go, I actually I have a question for you because I've been looking at a project and considering maybe using Go, but I'm not super familiar with it yet. I've done a little bit of dabbling. But one of the things was I was looking at, I guess, Martini as a framework and read some posts by the original author as well that said, you know, maybe this isn't really idiomatic Go.
Yeah.
And I wasn't quite sure why. There was some discussion about dependency injection. So I guess there's a question for you. What do you think about dependency injection, when it might be good, when it might not be good? Would that be related to this being idiomatic Go or not?
Yeah, so I haven't used Martini myself. I am somewhat familiar with it. In terms of dependency injection, I actually use dependency injection. Right. I mean, it's kind of like, it's a lot of overhead. It's kind of nasty, right? And like the one reason why you might want to do it is just to make testing easier.
Right. That seems to be the ongoing theme, is that it makes it a lot easier for the developer to test. So
I ended up just creating my own library for dependency injection. I like doing that, so I just kind of coded my own libraries. But yeah, that's what I did.
That seems to be kind of encouraged in the Go community, you know, write it yourself.
Yeah, kind of zero tech stuff.
I have a friend that just his day job is all Go-based. Every 6 months or so, I ping him about Go and be like, hey, man, checking out Go. You know, would you recommend this or recommend that? He's like, oh, man, just use the base HTTP library. It's good enough. It has a router. It has a middleware based and all that stuff. He says, just use that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I guess, like, but a lot of the time you need a little bit of extra stuff, like templating properly and all this other stuff. But a lot of them say, like, write yourself just use the base libraries. They're there and they're good.
Yeah, and you don't have to. I mean, there's a large community. Like, if you really just wanted to go use another library, a lot of times, you know, that's a very valid thing to do. I got this done. I don't have time to write this, or I don't want to. You know, you can find stuff on GitHub, on Bitbucket, on other places where people have already done it for you.
Okay, so Go is a big part of the stack. What else?
Postgres. So Postgres is nice. And I think some of it came about because, you know, one thing on my mind is like scalability and high availability and all that stuff. So, okay, what happens if the system goes down? Postgres, at least, is claimed. I've never tested myself. It's claimed that if it crashes, it'll come back really quick. And the reason it comes back really quick is the write-ahead log. That was part of the motivation. You know, we're dealing with people's money. We don't want the system to be down for long. We want people to be happy and use our system. So,
awesome. Well, that sounds pretty cool. So tell us a bit more about Coho. Is Coho hiring? What would you be hiring for? What type of person should reach out and how to reach you?
Yeah, so Coho is hiring. We're hiring, I think, 3 or 4 people. So it's two or three engineers and one product manager. Although I should say, like, I've seen two types of product managers. There's the king type that just decides, hey, we're going to do this. And then there's the data-driven stuff that goes talk to users, go deals with our focus groups. They do A-B tests and stuff like that. That's the type of product manager we're looking for. In terms of engineers, so I'm not specific that, like, oh, you have to know this programming language or you have to use this library. I always thought that was stupid. I mean, if you hire, you know, smart, self-motivated people, I mean, they can learn this pretty quick.
Right.
There's one gentleman, Joel Skrepnek, that I pronounced his last name properly, I think. So he joined Coho, and he was a C# dev before, and he picked up Go in 2 days.
Nice.
So, I mean, like, you know, this stuff, if you've done some back-end development before, you can pick up another language pretty quick, right? So yeah, we're looking for senior engineers. Mm-hmm. But if someone's very self-motivated and they're not a senior engineer, that's fine too. Mm-hmm. We have talked to people like that. So it's you know, the ad says senior engineers, but if right. you really want to go for it.
Senior is quite a loaded term, I think, when it comes to engineering.
Well, I'll tell you what I mean by senior. Mm-hmm. So to me, what a senior is, someone can give you a task and it can be vague, right? Mm-hmm. And if someone non-technical is talking to you, it's vague. There's mm-hmm. a lot of details missing. The person can just do it themselves, mm-hmm. right? Someone who's, like, say, intermediate or junior, they need handover. They need someone else to break it down for them. Mm-hmm. To me, that's what a senior is.
Right.
I see. So someone that can just hear the description of a problem and go out and solve it without any other details.
Yeah, or they'll just go ask questions.
Okay, mm-hmm. I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's really interesting. It kind of reminds me of something that I've heard Adam say. He said something like looking for a senior engineer, not in terms of years, but in terms of performance.
Well, there's this whole thing like, okay, do you have 10 years of experience or do you have 1 year experience that you repeated 10 times?
that's a good discrepancy to mention.
Very
interesting. Okay, so if somebody wanted to get a hold of you or reach out to Koho, how would they do so?
They could do it at charles@koho, which is koho.ca.
charles@koho.ca.
Yeah.
It sounds like everyone can find you at Reaver on a lot of the Slacks.
Yeah. So that's my secret identity.
Yeah.
So there's this, and I've actually had people like just know me from that. So
cool.
I don't really have pictures online. So there is a blue circle with a white star in front of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've had people meet me and then they realize they're, you're the blue and white star, right?
Yeah.
So, and I go by the username Reaver. So R-E-I-V-E-R. That's on Twitter, on GitHub, on like Slack and all that stuff.
And some Quora answers.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember I was actually researching, you know, what's a decent language to use or what sort of questions should I be asking in determining what to use to build an API? And I came across this question and somebody was asking, but I think that particular person was using PHP.
Okay.
And this is from 2010 as well.
Yeah.
And I saw an answer from Reaver.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of an Easter egg if you can find it.
Yeah. Go online and find that Easter egg.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being on, Charles. And do you have any final comments?
I'd say one thing is that Vancouver is very much a who you know say. And this is just for like, you know, people who are younger, people who are early in their careers. Mm-hmm. I would say one way to, you know more people is go to meetups. Like go socialize, go to socials like mm-hmm. Hackers Nest.
Yeah. What are some meetups you might recommend?
So if you have a software engineering background, I'd say go to Hackers Nest, mm-hmm. go to Polyglot and go to VanDev. If you have language specific ones, then mm-hmm. go to that. If you're more into like the data science, machine learning course, go to data science, machine learning and all that. But I would say if you go to a talk and there's a dinner afterwards, go to it. You'll meet a lot of people and you'll mm-hmm. get unexpected opportunities. Like someone will meet you. It's like, hey, this guy's smart. I wonder if he's looking for a job. Like, mm-hmm. you know, come over here.
Yeah, definitely.
It's kind of neat because it seems like not that many people are actually looking for jobs.
Yeah.
And so I always say this to people that I'm working with when we're like, okay, we need to get someone. Most of the people that we would want to hire are already happy in their jobs or are already working somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a matter of just presenting opportunities to people and see if maybe this is a little better of a cultural fit almost most of the time.
What I've also found, I kind of figured this by accident, mm-hmm. you go to these dinners and you talk mm-hmm. to people, right? And you get a sense of who's, you know, good, mm-hmm. but you also get a sense of who's unhappy, mm-hmm. right? And people who are good tend not to be, you know, available, like for an hour, they're available. Right. But it's like, you know, I'm not saying quit your job, but, you know, this place is hiring. Like, I'm not saying do that, but, you know.
Yeah,
Just to keep your mind open.
Yeah.
And it's also a really good chance to just get to know other people in general. And that might kind of lean toward, you know, are they working on something I'd be interested in working on? Would I be interested in working with these people?
Yeah.
Well, I think I've artificially bolstered my time here. People think that I've been here for years, but I haven't even been here a year yet.
Yeah.
And I already go to meetups and know a bunch of people like, oh, hey,
I think that goes back to the, you know, do you have 10 years of experience or do you have 10 years of that 1 year of experience?
Yeah.
I think like being involved in the community is a big part of it as well.
Yeah,
it's fun. It's really fun.
You'll also talk to people with interests like your own.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're into tech, they're into other stuff. A lot of like technical people tend to be more introverted, but mm-hmm. you're around people who like think like you. Mm-hmm. They're interested in tech. They're interested in like those type of things. You'll actually enjoy it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for being on the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Awesome.
Thanks, Charles.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, Van Tech Podcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the Van Tech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Same Room for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, Van Devs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups
around town.